Thank you so much for joining us for hour number two of the Internet Advisor. And I realize this week we have to do this almost every spring when we come back, is to sell people on the idea of you actually can get on the radio right now and ask us a question. Well, I don't know. We've had a bunch of people who called and said, I can't be on the air. Yes, you can. It's a conversation. And here's the key thing, that when you call and ask a question, simple as it may be, you're helping a whole bunch of other people, because as we answer your questions, there's a lot of people out there who may have been sitting on their hands and saying, I don't know if I can call the radio station. So be bold, be brave. We'll help answer a lot of people's questions, including yours, at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Call right now. Now, guys, we had a call from a fellow named Gerald in Detroit, and he wanted to know if there's a way to download Android apps and games to his Windows computer. And Rick and Shane, what do you think?
There is a way.
The short answer is yes. Yeah. That's a short answer.
Well, okay. If there's a good way or not, you might be better off.
That's the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried, you know, we talked about BlueStacks a little bit and some of the other emulators that will emulate.
So what's an emulator, first of all? What is an emulator?
An emulator, I don't know the technical lingo, but an emulator pretty much simulates that operating environment.
So it's an application you would download onto your computer, right?
Correct.
And install there, kind of like a virtual machine?
It would, like a virtual machine. It would simulate that particular device or that operating system.
And then you would install the whatever the program, the game, or the application
is there. And a lot of IT guys use it when they're doing phone support. They'll, you know, someone's on Windows, you know, back in the day, Windows 95, and we haven't used it. We'll use a Windows 95 emulator so we can tell people where to go, because we've got it right there in front of us.
Did you have anything else that you've experienced on that, Rick?
No, I haven't used it firsthand. I've heard about, you know, the possibility of doing this if you want to, but I haven't actually had much hands-on with it.
I've had mixed results. Sometimes it's almost 50-50 on a lot of these games. Now, the BlueStacks has their little player that you can play these games on your TV. Those games have been tested, but you know they're not a ton of the games you're familiar with. But you know, if you want to play some of these games and you try it on your PC, it's very
so
buggy.
BlueStacks.
BlueStack is probably where he wants to start.
BlueStack or Stacks?
Stacks.
So it's BlueStacks.
And really, the trick to an emulator is it translates, right?
Correct.
And it does that really, really fast. But when you're trying to eke out the most speed possible to get your screen refreshed, to be able to see everything in as quickly as you can for the normal game, to put another layer of translation in between, that's part of the problem that makes it.
Well, so
it
we
very
don't know
difficult.
That he necessarily wanted to do this for gaming purposes.
Well, gaming was one of the things.
Oh, that was one of
applications.
The yeah.
And games.
Okay.
So sometimes applications are a little more successful because you're not dealing with real time screen refresh and some other problems that you might see.
Okay. Good. Okay. So there you go. That's one answer. Hope we've got some people. By the way, let's see. You go to it's BlueStacks.com, and I see here a download for XP Vista Win 7 and 8, and they have a checkout at GamePop, and then they also have a download for Mac OS X.
Yeah, GamePop is their console that import it, bring it into your TV set, those different apps.
I got you. Okay, goes in there.
And they'll get better and better over
the
years.
Right, right. All right, let's go to Ellen from Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Ellen, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
How can we help
you? I have an old computer which is at least 8 years old, and it has XP on the program, and I know it's not being supported in a few days.
Yes, as a matter of fact, Ellen, just a moment. Yes, for the rest of you out there, April the 8th is the official end. Next week, Tuesday, I think it is? Yep. Patch Tuesday is going to be the official end of support for Windows XP. So go ahead, Ellen. Yes, I want to confirm that. Yep.
So I was wondering if my computer is too old to put the version 7 or 8 on, and then if I consider that, what do I do with XP? Do I have to delete that file?
Those are very good questions you have, and probably the basic question a lot of people are asking with older computers. Gary, you want to start?
I think you need to upgrade. Computers are, and I don't want to have you go out spend money you don't need to spend. You probably are using a desktop, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you don't have to upgrade the screen or the keyboard. You just need the actual box.
Yeah.
Now you will. by upgrading, you won't have to deal with the very slow bus systems and some of the innards, the way that the data transfers from the hard drive to the motherboard where the processor is. It's so cheap today, I would go out and get
And just to clarify, Gary, when you say upgrade, you mean buy a new desktop as opposed to upgrading Windows itself on their existing system.
Exactly. Yeah, I think you buy a new one. And, Ellen, what I would do is I think for you, unless you're really into learning something new, it's not very hard to learn Windows 7. There's a lot of really good things about Windows 7. It'll be a lot faster for you. It's a lot more secure. Windows 8 goes to a very different format. If you wanted to upgrade to, say, a tablet-like with a touchscreen, I would definitely get a touchscreen if I went to Windows 8. But I think if you upgrade to Windows 7, you will be, you'll find that it's much better.
Shane, when you get, I'm sure you get to ask this question quite often in your
Feel free to disagree with anything I'm saying.
I totally disagree with you. No. Ellen, here's the easiest thing for you you're going to need to do. You're not going to find this information by going to Best Buy in some of these larger stores because they don't carry Windows 7. It doesn't exist anymore on that level.
That's right.
So what I would recommend, Ellen, is find a local computer store that go online and look at Yelp, look at some of the reviews, and do a search, open up Bing and do a search for computer repair or computer stores in your city and look at some of the reviews and go out and talk to those guys. There's tons of great computer stores out there that can offer you a Windows 7 Pro or Windows 7 home machine, maybe an off-lease machine.
For how much? How much do you make?
Oh, geez. At our store, we sell them for about $299 for an off-lease quad-core 4 gigs of DDR3. Nice
but that's
machine.
But that's with the monitor and everything, right?
No.
Oh, that's just the box.
Just the box.
Okay.
You're going to spend
which is what we want her to do.
Between $2 and $299, somewhere in there, you'll get a great machine with Windows 7 all loaded up, and they'll walk you through the process. And the great thing about Windows 7, Ellen, is it's not a big jump from XP to 7 for you. Things are still familiar to you, where at 8 they wouldn't be.
Right. Now, Rick, quickly, before we go to break.
I was just going to ask Ellen, what's your primary use for the machine? What are you using this for?
Well, it's email, and I do have Word, Microsoft Word, and some files, but that's about it.
Okay, so, I would actually recommend thinking about the possibility of moving to a laptop for starters, because you can do that very inexpensively. And to Gary's point, you could even, look at a laptop that has a touchscreen. And with Windows 8, it's actually, there's a learning curve there, but I think, for your type of usage, it's actually kind of a nice way to go. And once you learn the basics, then you kind of dispense with a lot of the... Foster's happy to hear that.
One of the things...
It depends on what kind of user you are, and it sounds like you're the candidate.
And Ellen, what I would recommend you do, whether you're going into a local shop, as Shane was saying, or whether you go into some other store to buy a Windows 8 machine, go and get your hands on it. Just toddle in there and look at the machines and get your hands on it so that you get a sense of what these things look like. And I think it'll help you.
I got one last quick thing. Go ahead, Ellen.
And what I have on the computer now on some files and things, how would I transfer that to the new machine or the new laptop or the new computer?
Well, that's kind of one of the reasons why I recommend you go into. They'll do a data transfer for you. It's a small service, very inexpensive. Sometimes they'll do it for free.
Right.
But I think when we were talking about Windows 8, the new Windows 8.1 update is going to make things even easier for you.
Because next Tuesday it comes out. The same day that XP is gone, support for that, Windows 8.1 update will come, and it will, matter of fact, if you have a desktop and you don't have a touchscreen, it will look almost the same as Windows 7 because it'll boot right into that.
But if you go to Windows 8, get a touchscreen.
Yep.
Oh, I see.
And Best Buy is doing a $100 trade-in on a Windows XP machine starting tomorrow. This quick bit of insider info for you.
And Microsoft Store in Detroit, doing the same thing. Ellen, thank you so much, dear. Take care. This is a ball. Being back here with you folks live on Saturday afternoons. And yes, we're going to be here from 4 to 6, and you can count on us being here through by about the middle of August when the football team comes back out on the field and those big guys in green start pushing us around. But in the meantime, we're here every Saturday regardless, and you can get us, if you don't get us when we're on the air live and call in then, you can also send us an email, and you simply go to internetadvisor.net, go to the Contact Us button, and put your request in there through an email to us. And by the way, thank you very much to Annie Nichols, our lady of the phones, who's there, and Rich Luzinski, who's our engineer, who are making this program possible. And again, you'll get to Smiling Annie by calling 800-859-0957. Rick, just after we pulled the plug on the last segment, you said something very important.
Right.
Worth repeating, in view of the fact that next Tuesday, April the 8th, Windows support will end. Kerplunk.
Right, but this does not mean that Microsoft is remotely flipping a switch and disabling your computer for now and all eternity. Your machine will continue to work.
Yes.
And work just fine, but it just simply means that security updates will no longer be issued by Microsoft for Windows XP. If you've got yourself a decent security suite, Norton Antivirus and so forth, you're probably in good shape, at least for the short term.
Mm-hmm.
But you should definitely, now is the time you're really going to have to start thinking seriously about upgrading. I really think that for seniors in particular, a tablet is something you really want to consider.
Yes, thank you for saying that. Yes, especially the ones that, what are they calling them now? They have a tablet you can take the keyboard off.
I know. A hybrid.
A hybrid, that's
yes.
the term that's being used. So if you go in the store, folks, and people start saying, have you thought of a hybrid? Or a two-in-one is another one I hear as well. It's the idea that you have a tablet that you can disconnect and walk around with and watch things on, but you can also click the keyboard onto
it. Right, which is something I know you really like about your
Surface.
I love
about
because
the Surface.
It has the removable keyboard.
Love it.
And, I mean, those, the Surface tablets are a little pricier, but, certainly an option, for somebody who just needs the basics.
Yep. Okay. And some of the other hardware providers are going to come down in price, and
they
we'll
are.
See
it's starting to happen.
It's happening already, but we'll see it continue.
ASUS and Samsung and some of the other ones. What have you seen out there?
Well, it's competitive against iPads. I mean, they're...
Yes.
I mean, they're far more, in my opinion, affordable than an iPad. I mean, that's an option I give people all the time.
There are lots of good competition out there. Okay, let's go to Shirley, who is calling us from Ortonville. Hi, Shirley. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, Foster. I have two questions.
Yes,
the first one is, I have a new Dell Latitude laptop with Windows 7 on. It's the 6530 model.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm in the Internet Explorer browser, and I click on my favorites, they now have three folders for favorites. One is Dell favorites, one is World favorites, and then there's just a regular favorite. Can I delete the two that I don't want?
I think you can do anything you want with favorites. What they've done, if I'm not wrong with this, I don't know the specifics of those, but what they've tried to do is Microsoft used to do this all the time. IE would have its favorites, and it would be MSN, and it would be a whole bunch of their properties, and you could just simply toss that, just right-click and delete that folder if you didn't want those things. On the other hand, if you found something that was valuable, keep it. Or with favorites in particular, you can organize them any way you want where it makes sense to you. Guys, any other thoughts?
That makes sense to me.
No.
You didn't see these appear just out of the blue. You're saying that when you got the machine and you fired it up, you found them there and you were thinking, what the heck are these?
Right, and I was able to import from one of my other laptops, my favorites, and put it into the one of the favorite files.
Good.
But I didn't know if I could delete the other two.
Yeah.
Yes,
yep.
Absolutely. So.
By the way, do you use Google Chrome at all?
I do, and my second question is on Google Chrome.
Okay.
Ooh, the street man.
I have four different laptops that I've used within the last month, and when I installed Google Chrome on my new home laptop and put in my Gmail account, it imported the favorites from my old work computer, and I don't understand why it did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not have that occur on the same machine at work when I put in my Gmail account.
Well, I know from my experience with Chrome that when I put my Gmail account in, I found this to be a nice feature. It brings all my favorites in.
Yeah.
So wherever I happen to be, I could be on Rick's computer. If I went into Chrome that he has there and opened it up, I think it probably would allow me to open up my favorites and import them.
Right.
I just thought it was odd that the exact same hardware has different favorite lists when I put the same Gmail account in.
Hmm.
Well, it could have been favorites that were there prior to logging in, and then when you logged in, it kind of synced them a little bit, so you're going to get different lists.
Well, and it may be the favorites with the Google would come with Google, so it comes down with Google as she puts in her.
I haven't found Google doing that, knowledge. Not to my knowledge. Like, as I said, Internet Explorer used to do that.
Right.
But I've never experienced that personally with Google. Have you, any of you guys?
No.
Never mind. Mm.
These were not Google favorites. These were favorites that I had set up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was odd that I do not receive the same lists on three different computers when I put in my Gmail account.
Well, I think maybe the difference here is that when you installed Chrome as part of the initial setup process, it asked you to sign into your Google account, and then it set up sync as part of that process.
Right.
Versus if you already had Chrome installed somewhere else, or maybe someone else installed it, a work machine or whatever, and you simply went to Gmail within the browser, you signed into your Gmail account, but you weren't necessarily signing into your Google account within the browser proper. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that might be the difference.
Might be picking up somebody else's favorites, I'm guessing. But I guess the key thing here, Shirley, is that you can arrange those things any way you want. Matter of fact, I'm going to do some of that because I've got this horrible clutter.
Okay.
And you can make folders, and you can put favorites in certain folders
and
really make it much more reasonable to use.
Okay, well, I will go home and delete them.
All right, Shirley,
thank
you so much. Appreciate you. By the way, we had a call earlier on from Sean in Romulus who couldn't stay with us. And speaking of bookmarks, he wants to know how to save bookmarks and vital information that he has in Firefox's Mozilla. You may have heard that there's a controversy going on because the CEO recently was, resigned under fire because of some of some issues. Regardless of not getting into those issues, the question is, if I don't want to use Firefox anymore or Mozilla, is there a way I can get those favorites out and go to another browser with them?
First of all, if the only reason that you're doing that is you don't want to use Mozilla anymore,
mm-hmm.
the guy's resigned.
Yeah.
I mean, if you liked Mozilla enough before to use it, he's resigned.
But it's kind of like we talked about the cell phone issue before. The issues involved in this are really sensitive ones in terms of social dynamics. The degree of people's faith.
Mozilla, found out about it, he resigned.
What is this Mozilla you speak of?
Firefox.
It's Firefox browser.
Just to answer the question, you can go into the bookmarks menu area. There is an export. Manage bookmarks, there's an export button there. You export them to an HTML content, and then you can import them to anything you like.
So if you went, for instance, you said export, you would go export to the desktop and give them a name there, my bookmarks,
correct.
My Firefox bookmarks.
Nice
Boom.
Thing. A nice thing about Explorer is when you set up your Explorer into the bookmarks, it will ask you, do you want to import bookmarks from other browsers listed, installed on your computer, and it'll handle all that for you.
Right, and same with Chrome. If you switch over to Chrome, mm-hmm. first same install, way. It'll say, should we? So you don't have to do anything, really.
All of these browsers have an export and import function.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way you handle it. Okay. All right, let's go to Andy from Livonia. Andy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Yes, just a man I want to talk to. Last year I went from XP to Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a nice program where I could label my CDs and my DVDs. I'd put them on a label and print them out, and it worked great. And I must have, 100, 150 of these. Well,
mm-hmm.
to my chagrin, when I went to Windows 7, I can no longer access this program. They're just kind of dead in the water. I can't get to it. Is there any way that you know of that I can, I call the manufacturer, and he says, it's not compatible anymore.
But hang on a second. If you're going from, you went from XP to Windows 7, right?
Yes.
In Windows 7, isn't there an emulator is it XP mode is called?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
There is?
Yeah, hang on a second.
There is. I think you have to have 7 Pro, though, for that, if I'm not mistaken.
For this emulator, but there is also a way to there's a compatibility mode.
There is a compatibility
mode to try to use.
But it, and again, that's hit and miss as well, right, whether it works or not. But are we talking paper labels or are we talking LightScribe?
No, it's paper. It's on paper. But I suppose I could do it on a LightScribe.
LightScribe.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of software out there that you can just get.
Avery, for, you know, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there's just label maker software. There's Roxio one.
Sharpie marker.
But my problem is I can't access my current file.
Your current files.
Hang on just a second. We're going to put you on hold, and during the break, we'll see if we can solve this particular problem. Bob from Fraser, we'll be with you in just a moment. Well, I want to thank you all for being with us here on this kind of the inaugural voyage for us in the year 2014. Our regular schedule, if you will, from 4 to 6 in the afternoons on Saturdays. Delighted to be here live and to have Shane and Rick and Gary in studio. Ed will be back next week, and Kel, who was with us as well regularly, will be back soon as well. And it's fun to be available to you folks. So please, as you're listening to us, I know people are getting a lot of information. They're thinking, gee, I wish I could have caught what he said. Well, don't worry about that, because every Sunday night I post a podcast, which goes up, and you can find it by going to internetadvisor.net, and it's posted there on Sunday nights, or you can subscribe to that podcast through iTunes, or Downcast is another one that I use, and get it delivered to you every week. And then we're also going to be developing some new things as well, so stay tuned to that, all right? All right, very good. Let's go out to Bob in Fraser. Bob, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and how may we help you?
Oh, you can hear. I was listening to one of your callers, a young lady who said she had 4 laptops and she was switching in between them.
Right.
And she loaded Chrome.
Right.
And she was wondering why the bookmarks were automatically loaded on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that she was. Go ahead, Bob.
If I'm not mistaken, if you use Internet Explorer prior to using Chrome, I think Chrome by default will ask you if you want your bookmarks from Internet Explorer transferred into Chrome.
Oh, yeah, it does ask that. I remember that. And that would be why she would find different bookmarks, you think, than just the Chrome mark?
You know, Chrome does come with a full few bookmarks. I think it transfers all the bookmarks from Internet Explorer.
You're right. It does ask you if you want to take in the bookmarks from other browsers, and that's where I think, Rick, you mentioned that as well. It'll pick up ones from Internet Explorer,
right.
And you know, that's, I have found, by the way, over the years that's why I've ended up with duplicates of a lot of those darn things, because I get, you know, the favorites from Internet Explorer and a different number of different computers. But you're absolutely right. Well, thank you for that, Bob.
Well, that's good. It's a beautiful day out here. I just wanted to know that.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a lovely day in our neighborhood as well. By the way, folks, that number we give you of 800-859-0957 is for answers as well as questions. Sometimes there are folks out there who have a really good perspective on a particular answer that they can give us, and we love you guys calling in and helping us with that as well. And here's Ronald from Detroit. Hi, Ron. How can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Well, I bought a laptop about 7 or 8 months ago,
and
all of a sudden, you know, I put automatic update in there, and then all of a sudden it come back and said, this copy of Windows 7 may not be legitimate. Please put the activation number in there. Where do I find the activation number?
Yeah, Shane, you're shaking your head.
Ronald, where did you buy this from? Someone you knew or a local?
I bought it from a computer repair shop.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, as for many good computer people out there, there's also people that really don't know, that aren't like certified Microsoft partners, that just don't know how to sell these licenses. You probably have a computer that someone just loaded Windows on, and Windows will not pester you right away for that activation. Then all of a sudden, with an update, boom, you've got to activate it.
What does it do?
Well, there's a couple different options there. There's some buttons there that say, well, try to activate online.
Okay.
And if you click on that, it will try to go online and activate itself. And then one will be click for a phone number to call it in. You'll click on it. It'll ask you for, I believe, your zip code. It'll ask you for something that will identify you, what area you're in.
Yeah, I've done that, yeah.
And it'll give you a activation code that it'll ask you for on the phone. It's an automated service. It'll ask you for this long digits of code.
Get ready to take numbers. A lot of numbers and letters down.
But I have found over the years of really messing with this phone system that you could speak pretty much as fast as you want, and it'll understand you.
Well, so, I purchased Windows 7 several years ago. I didn't put it in for about 2 years because I was so impressed with XP.
Yeah.
Until they took all the bugs out. I do have a copy that I purchased of Windows 7.
Correct.
But back in those days, I wasn't all that computer literate, so I didn't know.
And now you're
on the box, there is a number.
Yep.
Yes.
And with that number is how you activate it. Well, I don't know where the box is with the number on it, but I did register that Windows 7 copy. Can I reload the purchase copy of Windows 7 on here?
Not unless you have that activation. You got to have a COA, the Certificate of Authentication. If you don't have that, you really can't load it onto a computer. Now, you are able to install it on one computer at a time. So if you install it on one laptop and you want to put it on another one, technically you have to uninstall it, and then you can do that.
Okay.
But he doesn't have to necessarily reload Windows 7 on there.
Well,
he can go out and look for an activation code the way you talked about, right?
You can, but he's not going to – unless he has it himself, is it the exact version? Is it Windows 7 Home? Is it Windows 7 Pro? There's different – is it 64-bit?
I purchased a Windows 7 Home, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, is it the 32-bit version? Is it 64-bit version?
Well, mine was updated to a 64-bit, but the copy that I bought was a 32-bit, and I had my computer, the desktop, uploaded to a 64-bit. But for some strange reason, after about several months of that, it came back and told me all my programs started crashing. And so that's why I bought the laptop.
Yeah, well, the best thing you could do, Ronald, is when it tells you, hey, this is not a legit copy, check and see if it is a legitimate copy of Windows. Go ahead and do that and let it go through its steps to validate that copy.
Right.
And then it'll tell you what its final results are.
Can I go out and purchase a number?
Unfortunately, you can, but whether that number is going to be correct or not, there's a lot of scams out there. What about the company that you first purchased this from, Ronald?
Well, I purchased it from, what's the name of the company? There's only one company here in Detroit.
Micro Center?
14 miles out in...
Micro Center.
Yeah, that's the one I always buy everything from.
Take walk yourself right in there with that laptop and you have them fix that issue.
Yep.
Okay. But the laptop, I didn't purchase this from them. I purchased the laptop from a computer repair shop.
Then walk into there and tell them, find out if they're a Microsoft certified partner. And if they are, ask them that. And that might shake their boots a little bit into fixing that issue because if they are, they've got to fix that problem.
Ronald,
right away.
The very first computer I had built for myself was built by one of those characters. It was an Armada. And then somebody had said, hey, a friend of mine can build you a computer. I said, oh, great. I went out there, and it was like $300, $400 some odd dollars that I paid for this thing. And it turned out that he had been taking one version of Windows, whatever it was at that time. Gary, when you started doing the program back, was like 98, I think it was, maybe.
Right, 98.
It was Windows 98 he had put on the machine. He was using one install disk on every machine that he built. And so I went back out to him and said, yo, that doesn't work. And matter of fact, I think Gary had told me on the air about that. And so he had to install a legitimate, had buy a new one and install a legitimate one on there for me.
Yeah, but I would have thought that it's with a laptop, it's a Hewlett-Packard. It would have had. They would only have come with Windows 7.
Hey, Ronald, was that laptop classified to you as a refurbished or used or an off-lease machine when you bought it?
Refurbished.
And it all depends if that particular is it a gentleman that has a storefront?
No, it wasn't a storefront. It wasn't a storefront. I mean, they got all kinds of computer stuff in there.
It wasn't the trunk of a car, was it?
Oh, no, I wouldn't have did that anyway.
Well, chances are you get those computers available for pawn shops.
Yes.
I've seen those at the pawn shop. Now, what would I be looking for? Because the price of the ones in the pawn shop are very reasonable. But what would I look for to make sure I don't get something like I got now?
You know what? Go online and just search for your area in Detroit, and you're going to see tons of reviews for different local computer stores.
Okay.
And then, read those reviews and go see them. I mean, that's the only way. Ask them these questions. Are you a certified Microsoft partner? Are you a certified Microsoft refurbisher?
Okay.
If you ask them those two questions and they say yes, then you should be okay.
All right, Ronald, we'll have to wrap it up for this week, but thank you. You've asked some excellent questions there. Hope we've helped you out. Hey, guys, Rick, thanks so much for being with us again. It's a delight having you here in the studio.
Thanks, my pleasure.
Shane, we'll look forward to having you again next week.
That's
and
right.
Gary, good to have you around as well.
Always here.
Folks, thank you so much for joining us. And remember, we're here regularly now from 4 to 6 on Saturdays. And get your questions ready for us in that second hour from 5 to 6. And thank you again to Annie Nichols and Rich Lozinski and all the folks who make this program happen. Don't forget our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Lots of information waiting for you there. Foster Brown for the crew here. Happy computing.